This is The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio. RNIB Talk and Support run telephone social groups for adults with sight loss. There are telebefriending groups which help you socialise by phone for friendship and support, or you can share your passion for books and reading by taking part in a telephone book club. We'll tell you how you can take part in your own telephone social group later on in the show. But for now, let's listen in to our telephone book group on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello there. My name is Alan. I'm 65 and I live in Epping Forest. I've been blind since birth and I have macular dystrophy of the Stargardt type. I love books. I love reading. I love audiobooks. Crime and travel are my favourite genre.
Hello, I'm Peggy. I'm 80. I'm from Scotland, but now I live in West Wales. I have macular degeneration. I've always loved reading. I love anything and everything. I read all sorts of books and always have.
Hello, I'm David. I'm from Chester and I'm 57 years old. I went blind when I was 6 months old and I have very badly scarred retinas. As far as reading goes, I do like a lot of horror fiction. I like some crime fiction and I like a lot of classics.
Hi, I'm Ushma. I'm over 21 and I'm from Eastcote in Middlesex. I've been blind since birth and I'm wheelchair bound due to brittle bones. I absolutely love reading. I've got a degree and a master's in Shakespeare. I love a little bit of all sorts, really, including the classics, historical fiction and some light comedy as well.
Hi, I'm called Peter and I live in Grays, Essex. I'm 91. If you pardon my stammer, by the way, I have a wide taste in books, adventure stories. I've been reading Terry Pratchett recently.
Hello, I'm Supriya. I come from Aldershot and I'm 42. And I have been blind since I was about 2 years old, and I had a condition called retinoblastoma, which is a tumour in the eyes. I like reading classics and any other books, mainly historical fiction, romantic fiction, and I'll try anything once.
This month, the book group are discussing Notes from a Small Island by Bill Bryson. The RNIB version is read by John Chancer.
My first sight of England was on a foggy March night in 1973, when I arrived on the midnight ferry from Calais. For 20 minutes, the terminal area was aswarm with activity, as cars and lorries poured forth, customs people did their duties, and everyone made for the London Road. Then abruptly, all was silence, and I wandered through sleeping low-lit streets threaded with fog, just like in a Bulldog Drummond movie. It was rather wonderful having an English town all to myself.
A clip of John Chancer reading Bill Bryson's Notes from a Small Island. But what did the book group think? Your facilitator this month is Tom.
So, hello, welcome everyone. As you know, today we're discussing Notes from a Small Island by Bill Bryson. In an opinion poll organised by World Book Day in 2003, Notes from a Small Island was voted by BBC Radio 4 listeners as the book which best represented Britain. Just wondered if you agreed with this, and if you do, why do you think it is that Bryson, as an American, is able to write so well about Britain? The other thing I'd be interested to hear about is, in the book, did Bryson visit anywhere you've lived or visited? And if he did, how did his observations compare to your own? So, Ushma, perhaps we'll start with you.
Okay, basically, I loved, one thing I loved about the book was sort of the general style of writing. He's very, very, you sort of feel very descriptive, very vivid. So you sort of feel like you're accompanying him on this tour. I think my favourite was the sort of the description of, you know, when he sort of first gets to England and he wants to go to a guest house. And I think he wanted supper or something. I think you remember the encounter. He wanted supper and he sort of had to, but that was described very, very humorously.
The only mildly dismaying thing was that all the hotels and guest houses appeared to be shut up for the night. I walked as far as the rail station, thinking I'd catch a train to London, but the station, too, was dark and shuttered. I was standing, wondering what to do, when I noticed a gray light of television filling an upstairs window of a guest house across the road. Hooray, I thought, someone awake, and hastened across, planning humble apologies to the kindly owner for the lateness of my arrival, and imagining a cheery conversation which included the line, "Oh, but I couldn't possibly ask you to feed me at this hour. No, honestly." "Well, if you're quite sure it's no trouble, then perhaps just a roast beef sandwich and a large dill pickle, with perhaps some potato salad and a bottle of beer." The front path was pitch dark, and in my eagerness and unfamiliarity with British doorways, I tripped on a step, crashing face first into the door and sending half a dozen empty milk bottles clattering. Almost immediately, the upstairs window opened. "Who's that?" came a sharp voice. I stepped back, rubbing my nose, and peered up at the silhouette with hair curlers. "Hello, I'm looking for a room," I said. "We're shut!" "Oh? But what about my supper?" "Try the Churchill on the front." "On the front of what?" I asked. But the window was already banging closed.
And did he write about anywhere you've lived?
Not to my knowledge, no. Reading the book, I mean, I sort of feel like I said, I sort of felt like I was sort of the company. It was literally like taking a tour around Britain with him, if you like. And I loved that first-hand experience, as it were.
Great. Supriya, what were your thoughts on the book?
I've written a few points. Do you want me to read those, or would you like me to answer those two questions first? How would I do this?
Read us the points that you prepared.
Okay.
First.
Bear with me. It's in bold. I've got to sort of tell you the points. Yes, about the representation of Britain, this might answer your question. I don't think... it is. It's a nice book to read. It's an interesting book to read. But I think people get like a make up their minds, but that wouldn't be the whole truth, if you see what I mean. I think they need to read a few more books to make up their mind, finally, not just this one alone. And also I felt that he didn't cover all of the UK. I was quite disappointed he didn't cover Surrey and Hampshire, because I was really looking forward to reading the counties I know well, I've lived in. So he just seemed to jump large swathes of Britain and, you know, sort of choose. There was no logic to the sort of places he chose, and he didn't cover East Anglia or large parts of, you know, other parts of the country. So that's one point. I love the things he said about London. I totally agree with him. I think it's one of the greatest cities on earth, and I love London. Mm. There's a point he made about the hedgerows, and it really saddened me to know how much we'd lost. And this was in 95. And I beg to think, in 20-odd years, how much more we've lost. Mm. That really saddened me. I wish we could, you know, do something to stop that happening. And also about the church pews, I 100% agree with him. I like old churches to have pews, not chairs. I've seen a lot of churches go in that direction, and I agree with him. So yes, lots of points he makes. The other point I've made is he was full of praise for Britain one minute, and the next minute I think it was quite scathing. So he's sort of swung from one extreme to the other fairly quickly within a few paragraphs. But, well, it's all interesting, makes an interesting read. I would buy the book for friends and family abroad, but I felt there was a lot of bad language in it, so I'm a bit reluctant to do that yet. Mm. I haven't made up my mind, and I think it was unnecessary, the swear words and so on. And the other thing I found with him was he comes across, his sense of humour is great, his style of writing is absolutely brilliant. He comes across as quite belligerent and cantankerous sometimes.
Oh, that might
just be his personality, but that wasn't very pleasant sometimes. But on the whole, I liked it, and I'm going to read the sequel.
This is David speaking. I didn't particularly mind the swear words, and I didn't think it was gratuitous, and I kind of felt that it had its place, and it does represent the way people speak these days. You know, I mean, some people may say that's a good thing, some people may say it's a bad thing, but I didn't find it particularly offensive. My problem with the book, by and large, was the fact that I wasn't always sure whether Bill Bryce was making a serious point, or whether he had his tongue in his cheek. There were times when I thought, well, I wonder if he actually means that, or whether he's just being slightly ironic.
Mm.
The other thing about it as well, I felt, was that, as the other lady was saying, he did actually skirt around places, and there were an awful lot of the UK that he didn't visit. I was quite disappointed, actually, because towards the end of the book, he caught a train from Llandudno back into England, and he sort of just mentioned Chester in passing. And that is a really old Roman city, and I was hoping he might do a bit something on Chester. Although he did talk quite a lot about Bournemouth, which I did live near Bournemouth for a while, and that was quite interesting. He obviously knows Bournemouth better than, I mean, because I lived in the New Forest, which was just to the east of Bournemouth, and I used to visit there from time to time, and I used to kind of visit the beach and sort of beachside cafes and stuff like that, and I always thought it was quite a nice, it was one of those cities that you didn't go to in the summer because it was absolutely packed and, you know, full of tourists, but in the winter, it was actually, oddly enough, I used to quite like Bournemouth in the winter because it was quieter and you know, you could get good food, and it was still quite a bustling town.
The parks used to be described on maps as the Upper Pleasure Gardens and Lower Pleasure Gardens. But some councillor or other force for good realized the profound and unhealthy implications of placing lower and pleasure in such immediate proximity, and successfully lobbied to have lower removed from the title. So now you have the Upper Pleasure Gardens and the Mere Pleasure Gardens, and lexical perverts have been banished to the beaches, where they must find such gratification as they can by rubbing themselves on the groins. Anyway, that's the kind of place Bournemouth is, genteel to a fault and proud of it.
Alan, what were your thoughts?
I, like David, read the book some years ago, and at that time I enjoyed the read, and I approached it with an open mind. I did enjoy it more than I thought I would second time round. I found it a bit dated because, I mean, he started, you know, on the Kent coast in 1973, which obviously, and he mentions language and, you know, English phrases like counterpane. And I haven't heard the term counterpane for
a child.
Yes, exactly. So it was dated in that sense. What I liked about it, I mean, I've read a lot of Bryson. I'm almost overdosed on him, really. And I don't want this to sound churlish, but I'm almost grown out of him, if you like, and moved on to perhaps more serious travel writers like Paul Theroux, who I absolutely love, you know, because he deals with culture, he deals much more in depth. It's a much more serious read. Plus, there's this understated humour that he brings to play as well, quite political. So I think for the right time, I actually did enjoy it. And what it did for me, I mean, you know, there's two places he talked about in quite in length that I've never visited. One, from reading his account, I want to visit, like, tomorrow. I can't wait to go to Durham and visit Durham Cathedral. And visit, I've got a friend who's got a daughter at the university there, so I might accompany my friend when he visits his daughter and have a good look around Durham, because it sounds wonderful, Durham as a town.
I was heading for Newcastle by way of York when I did another impetuous thing. I got off at Durham, intending to poke around the cathedral for an hour or so, and fell in love with it instantly in a serious way. Why, it's wonderful. A perfect little city. And I kept thinking, why did no one tell me about this? I knew, of course, that it had a fine Norman cathedral, but I had no idea that it was so splendid. I couldn't believe that not once in 20 years had anyone said to me, you've never been to Durham? Good God, man, you must go there at once. Please, take my car.
He really didn't like Blackpool very much. And you don't go to Blackpool to find the meaning of life. You go to Blackpool for what it is. It's just a fun thing, you know, and lots of people go there. And he gave some really interesting stats, actually, about how many visitors Blackpool get.
Yeah,
compared
I couldn't believe that.
No, I couldn't believe it, Sabrina. No, I couldn't believe it. Mm. And I found that interesting, you know, apart from anything, it's a good sort of conversation starter when you're talking about travelling. But it's always been my ambition, sometime before I leave this world, to walk from Land's End to John O'Groats, unaccompanied or accompanied, probably now because of sight, accompanied. And I was really disappointed with John O'Groats, the way he described John O'Groats. I mean, I don't know if Peggy knows John O'Groats, but, you know, like Land's End is very, underwhelming as well. And it seems to me we don't make enough of the two extremities of these islands, you know. And he was disappointed with John O'Groats. I mean, he went, I think, off-season, so there was only one shop open, and there was only one shop there, apparently. You know, I wouldn't visit Blackpool if I read that, his account of it, if I took it as his opinion, and I probably wouldn't be over keen to go out of my way to go to John O'Groats now. And Durham was the opposite. The way he described Durham was, I can't wait to go to Durham, especially to go to the cathedral there, which he described very well.
Well, I have been, and I recommend it highly. It's a wonderful place.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and I agree with you about Chester, and I'm not just saying that because you're from Chester. I've heard so many good reports. I stayed at the university in the halls of residence once on a conference and didn't really get a chance to visit the town and the terrace streets and the beamed buildings. But he could have visited Chester. London goes without saying. I mean, I love London more than any place I've ever visited in the world. And I've been, you know, to many major cities in the world, in particular the Far East. But London, to me, it has everything. You can get any book you want. You can eat any food you want. You can find anything if you know where to go in London. And to me, that's an earth shrinker, especially if you're visually impaired, actually. I mean, you know, if you know someone who knows London well, off the tourist beat as well, the world is literally your oyster in London. It has a lot of things against it. But,
I agree.
You know, I think, yeah. So he didn't have to tell me that. But his humour, if you read a lot, and it sounds like you're going to, this was your first experience of Bryson. Yeah, sometimes I agree with someone said, you know, you're not sure whether, I think David said, you're not sure whether it's tongue-in-cheek or he's trying to make a salient point, a point that someone travelling or coming through the town or city would take seriously. Not always abundantly clear, his humour. Mm. And I think to answer your question, Tom, about why does it take an American, I mean, he lived in Yorkshire for some time anyway, so he's quite anglicised that way. But I think he has that detachment. You know, it's like you doing a review on New York. You know, we would probably see New York very differently to people who live in the suburbs of New York. So I think he gives him licence to be sometimes overcritical and sometimes bland, but he's been very selective. It's not a tour, you know, of every major city or historic or otherwise. So I don't want people to pick the book to listen to and think, you know, this is going to tell me about every place of interest in the British Isles, because clearly it's not. But I enjoyed it, and I think the biggest compliment I can pay it, I'd like to read this sequel he's written, almost Notes from a Small Island Revisited. I think it's called something, A Road to Dribble or something.
A Road to Little Dribbling.
I now want to read that. So, I mean, that's the biggest compliment I can pay it, really.
It's in the RNIB New Books, the latest new books
list. Yeah.
Is it? That's timely.
I was just going to say that I wasn't able to read much of the book, but what I read, I was able to, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed. I love his sort of writing style and the fact that he sort of, I think the fact that his observations are sort of so humorous as well. I sort of definitely want to read more of his writing.
Mm. Well, there's plenty to read.
There's absolutely loads. My favourite book of his was a book called A Short History of Nearly Everything.
Yeah.
A very optimistic title. But it actually encourages, and for somebody like me, I'm interested in science without being a scientist. So what it actually did for me was encourage me to read around various topics that he raised. It kind of starts off with the beginning of the universe and comes right through to modern times. I mean, it's, you know, very thumbnail sketches of events and things that happen, but it just does encourage you to sort of read around various subjects. And that's where I think Bill Bryson's at his best. He actually, you take him as a starting point, and then you carry on. If any particular subject that he discusses takes your fancy, then you can do some reading around it.
Yeah, I read that book for another book group, actually. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Very factual. So, you know, you have to reread certain things to remember it, but it's a very, very good book.
You're listening to The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio. The group are talking about Notes from a Small Island by Bill Bryson. And we'll have more after this.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
Do you get stuck when it comes to technology? Don't worry. Help is at hand with RNIB's Technology Support Squad. We can give you advice over the phone or visit you at home to help you master your technology. Help is at hand, from setting up a mobile phone and getting the most out of it, to using the accessibility features on your PC. Or maybe you need help with your Daisy talking book player. You can email technologysquad@rnib.org.uk and we'll get right back to you. Or call our helpline on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999. Get the most out of your technology with RNIB's Technology Support Squad.
And now we return to our book group, this month talking about Notes from a Small Island by Bill Bryson.
Peter, what did you think of the book, and did he write about anywhere that you've lived or been to?
I had read it before, and I quite liked it. This time, I kind of quite enjoyed it. I didn't mind the odd swear word. You know, I haven't lived a sheltered life, so you took the swear in my stride. But I do like Bryson, and he's kind of dry sense of humour. No place in particular stands out, but I think what he was aiming at was to find a flavour of the country and of the people and way of life, and I think he did it well.
Peggy, what were your thoughts?
Well, I haven't finished it because, as you know, I only got it last week, but I'm up to chapter 20 or something. I had read it years ago, possibly when it newly came out, and I love his style and his writing. And I do think a lot of his observations are very sharp, like was mentioned earlier, like the hedgerows, and also about the destruction of historic town centres. I think his eye for... he's got a very acute observation of things, and also for people. I didn't mind the swearing, especially a lot of it was... It wasn't gratuitous, it was... I did think Weston Supermare, and his fight with the landlord who shut him out in the rain and everything was very funny. And he did apologise to the man afterwards for shouting and screaming at him. So I think it comes across as very human.
There were two doorbells, and I tried them both, but without response. I tried my room key in the door, and of course it didn't work. I tried the bells again, leaning on them both for many minutes and growing increasingly angry. When this elicited no satisfaction, I banged on the glass door with the flat of my hand, then with a fist, and finally with a stout boot and a touch of frenzy. I believe I may also have filled the quiet streets with shouting. Eventually, the proprietor appeared at the top of some basement stairs, looking surprised. "I'm so sorry, sir," he said mildly as he unlocked the door and let me in. Have you been out there long? Well, I blush to think at how I ranted at the poor man. I used immoderate language. I sounded like Graham Taylor before they let him off and took away his warm-up suit. I accused him and his fellow townspeople of appalling shortages of intelligence and charm. I told him that I had just passed the dreariest evening of my life in this godforsaken hellhole of a resort, that I had been soaked to the skin by a carful of young men who, between them, were 10 IQ points short of a moron, that I had walked a mile in wet clothes, and had now spent nearly half an hour shivering in the cold because I had been locked out of my hotel at 9 o'clock in the f***ing evening. May I remind you, I went on in a shrill voice, that 2 hours ago you said goodbye to me, watched me go out the door and disappear down the street. Did you think I wasn't coming back? That I would sleep in a park and return for my things in the morning? Or is it merely that you are a total imbecile? Please tell me, because I would very much like to know.
I don't think belligerent, but it did seem to get... I think, like all of us, he gets annoyed when with stupidity sometimes, perhaps. And I think we should also look at it in the light that it was... He was going back, revisiting places in the off-season. Now, I have done enough travelling when I worked as a sales rep to visit places in the off-season. And they are very often, just as he said, everything seems closed. And we also have to look at the time that he wrote it in 95. It's different now because not everything is closed now on a Sunday. But in those days, in Wales and in the west of Scotland, he didn't do anything on a Sunday. I remember the outroar when, I think it was probably B&Q, people, somebody like that, first opened up a store on a Sunday, and the uproar about, you know, oh, people going shopping on a Sunday, oh dear. And you have to look at, in a sort of historical context, that things were very different in the 90s, in the 1990s, to what you would find if you did the same trip now. And things like the transport, obviously, the lack of buses and trains and things made him miss places because it took him much longer to do the trip than he had originally anticipated. And I have visited some of the places he visited, but I haven't lived in any of them, really. But on the whole, I enjoyed it, and I like his sense of humour. And I think you have to look at it. I think some of it probably is tongue-in-cheek, and I do think that his underlying affection for Britain and the British does come through, even when he's complaining about it.
Yeah, I think it does. I think he's very slightly eccentric, you know, and quaint. Mm. That's true. I think he was a bit guilty of stereotyping, you know, when he met the people in the hotel and he stereotyped, you know, the old English, British colonel type of
thing. Yeah.
Mm. I think that was a bit stereotyped. I think that was lazy writing, actually. You know,
I don't know. I have met some of them.
Yeah, no, they do exist, but not every person who's been through, you know, the army and the services and whatever is like that. You know, it's just a little bit stereotyping because that's how they're portrayed by many other authors.
It's the food that gets me," said her husband, raising himself a little to embark on a soliloquy. But it quickly became evident that he was one of those men who never get to say anything beyond the first sentence of a story. "Oh, yes, the food!" cried his wife, seizing the point. "They have the most extraordinary attitude to food." "What, because they like it tasty?" I inquired with a thin smile. "No, my dear, the portions. The portions in America are positively obscene." "I had a steak one time," the man began with a little chortle. "And the things they do to the language. They simply cannot speak the Queen's English. Now, wait a minute. Say what you will about American portions and friendly guys with colorful belt buckles, but mind what you say about American English. Why should they speak the Queen's English?" I asked a trifle frostily. "She's not their queen, after all."
I would like to think that not all landladies are like the landlady in the guest house in Dover. Mm-hmm. When he first...
yeah,
that was very unusual, I thought.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was never there in the 70s. Who knows what it was like?
I think there were a lot of them around.
Oh, I think so. I remember, you know, hearing other people talking about dreadful boarding houses when they went on holiday and, you know, the lack of comfort and getting thrown out. You had your breakfast and you were thrown out, and God help you if you didn't want to be outside for the rest of the day because you were not allowed back in until tea time.
That's right.
I mean, that definitely did exist. That, you know, that is true to life in a way.
I'll tell you the other thing I enjoyed or was informed by was, as a blind person, you know, he talked about seeing the Lake District, you know, from a certain place where he was, the view. And I had no concept that you could see from somewhere around Blackpool and, you know, the naked eye, if you like, who could see fully, could look over and see parts of, you know, the Lake District that I've sort of walked before and stuff, and the fells. I had no concept of that. And he described the passage. I don't know if any of you can remember it. And I thought, God, I didn't realise you could see, you know, you would be able to see that from where he was. So I think he did that really well, you know.
Yeah.
Especially to someone who's not seen, you know, reading it. Which I know it's quite specific, that, but it had added value, that, for me. You know, he did that well, I thought.
Mm. A lot of the descriptive writing in it is very good. It is very descriptive. It, you know, you could see places that you haven't seen.
Yeah.
You know, when he talks about the views from the coastal path and things like that.
Yes, exactly that, yeah.
I'd like to have him at my side to see these places for me and describe them.
He'd make a good audio describer, wouldn't he?
He would indeed, yes. That's what I thought.
Yes, it comes across as being very perceptive in many ways and having a good eye for detail.
Yeah.
Yes.
I found myself in the tranquil hamlet of Borth the Guest, a pretty village of brick villas on a horseshoe bay, with gorgeous views across Treath Bach to Harlech Point and Tremaro Bay beyond. Borth the Guest had an engaging, old-fashioned feel about it. In the middle of the village, overlooking the bay, was a sub-post office with a blue awning announcing on the dangling part sweets and ices. And nearby was an establishment called the Sea View Cafe. This place might have been lifted whole from Adventures on the Island. I was charmed at once.
My wife actually once said to me, how would it be at audio describing Coronation Street? And you can just imagine, what on earth is Ken Barlow doing now?
Oh, it's description of his visit to the Coronation Street.
Yeah, that
Street
was very good.
It was fantastic, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was good.
That was brilliant. Not that I'm a Coronation Street fan, but I did, you know, in the earlier days, of course, but his description of the visit to the set was super.
Yeah, the book was full of little cameos like that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, to pick out and be individualised, you know. It was good. It was a good romp. It was a good romp of a book, you know.
To join a group, either telebefriending or a telephone book club, please email talkandsupport@rnib.org.uk or call one of the two following numbers. 0845 330 3723 or 0207 391 2218. Thanks to RNIB Talk and Support. You've been listening to The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio.